Hello and welcome, I'm Luke Burridge, and this is the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. This is the show where I review every science fiction book I read. As I read them, I just do the review and put it up online here in the feed, where whenever or wherever I read the books. If you want to know more about me or about the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast, just check out episode number one, the very first one in the feed. You can find that at sfbrp.com, or just check out iTunes or anywhere that you can find the feed for this podcast. So let's get straight on to the book review. The book is from 2001. It's called Fallen Dragon, and it's by Peter F. Hamilton. I've read quite a few of his books, probably most of the books that he's written. A lot of them are in series of three books or two books, but this is a standalone book, and because it's a standalone book by Peter Hamilton, it's very big. It's very chunky. I've got it in my hand. Listen to this. That's it falling on my desk. Actually, I'll just flick to the back, see how many pages we've got here. 808 pages of story there. So it's a long book. It's a big book. There's a lot to get through here in this podcast. So I'm not going to go into too much depth, or into the same amount of depth that I'd go into another book. So first up, the universe that Fallen Dragon is set in is different from any other of Peter F. Hamilton's universes. And it's set maybe 400 years in the future, or 500 years in the future, and most of the Earth's problems have been sorted out already by technology. We don't need to look at that too much, but there's no pollution, there's plenty of food, there's no wars, computers do all the boring stuff. But Earth is in the grip of huge corporations, and the corporations are more powerful than countries. This is a theme that you see, or an idea that you see in many books. But there's some good ideas in this book that I've never seen before. First of all, these corporations and companies have been colonizing other solar systems, been terraforming the planet and setting up other sort of outposts of humanity there. Unfortunately, because spaceflight is so expensive and the colonies aren't profitable in any way because it takes so much money and effort and energy to transport anything back to Earth, these companies are just losing money, and the colonies are just losing money for the companies. So what happens is that this powerful company called ZB, Xantu Braun, they buy up these unprofitable colonies. And to get their money back, ZB then sends out asset realization missions to the colonies. And simply put, these asset realization missions officially steal anything that's valuable, valuable enough to actually transport back to Earth. In other words, it's pure piracy. Just piracy, and that's it. They just steal anything that's not worth, that is worth enough that it's worth taking back on these spaceships back to Earth. And that means they don't have to pay for the manufacturing of it, they just steal it and take it back. Because they own the colony, they own anything the colony has produced. Or that's the idea. And I really like this idea because it can only be justified by this extreme creative accounting, and it could only work in where this sort of the galaxy, or this part, this little corner of the galaxy, is run by big corporations. So the main focus, the main sort of thread of this book is sort of tells the story of an asset realization mission sent to this happy world, this peaceful world of Thalspring. Thalspring, that's where the book, most of the book is set. And there's actually a number of storylines in this book because it's so huge, and they're set in quite a few different timelines, or two main timelines. The first is the story of Lawrence Newton and how he leads his small squadron, his little platoon, in Memu Bay. And Memu Bay is this town on Thalspring. And Lawrence, he knows about this sort of mysterious, valuable asset somewhere in this remote village from the previous time that he's visited this planet. And he sort of plans to get that asset for himself. He's not quite sure what it is, and you're not quite sure what it is as a reader most of the way through the book, but that's what his motivation is. And with this valuable object, whatever he can find there, he's going to buy himself a new life. This timeline, this storyline, is also told from the point of view of some other characters. For example, there's Simon Roderick, and he is one of the managers of ZB. And first of all, I didn't quite work this out, but he's a clone of the founder of ZB, and there's not just one clone, there's a few. So there's Simon Roderick number one, number nine, number four. I can't remember the numbers of which Simon Rodericks you read about in this book. But that's another great idea I like, that one company can be completely controlled by the same person. It's another good nod to sort of bureaucracy and management styles taken to its extreme. Another character is the mayor of Memu Bay. His name is Miles. I can't remember his second name, but through him you get to see this asset realization mission through the eyes of a local politician trying to sort of keep his own or stand up against the military occupation. Then the main character, or the second main character of the book, is Denise. And Denise is a sort of 20-year-old kindergarten teacher who also happens to be the leader of the underground resistance force who are trying to fight off or trying to disrupt the asset realization mission that the ZB Corporation is putting against Memu Bay and Thorspring, against the planet of Thorspring. So I first read this book back in 2003, and reading it again now, I enjoyed it again quite a lot, and reading it again now, it really just shows how spot on Peter Hamilton writes about military occupation, especially like the military mission and the occupation of an unwilling population and territory. Because if you haven't noticed, there's been a war on for a while now in Iraq, and if the military commanders, the geniuses who planned the Iraq war, if they'd read this book, I reckon they'd have got on a lot better than they have done. For example, in this book, the initial occupation is very easy. A few troops are lost, but nothing too bad at all. But then, as the people patrol it and try to sort of control the population and the towns and the territories on Thorspring, there's this very small terrorist movement which slowly takes its toll on the enemy troops. Because, like, at first, in Iraq, the British troops didn't even have to wear helmets down in Basra in the early days, but over time it got worse and worse and worse, and the population turned against them more and more and more. And it's exactly the same in this book, how a tiny number of people can derail a massively overwhelming military operation and occupation entirely by using tactics and weapons and devices that the troops that are sort of the occupying troops, they're just not trained for. And the same in Iraq, they're not trained, these troops were never trained for house-to-house fighting and sort of winning over the hearts and minds of the people of Iraq. That's just not what they were trained for at all. So, if you get my point, this book could have been written and say in 2007, and it would have been, you would have just said, oh, this is a book about the Iraq war, or a big part of it could have been about the Iraq war and a military occupation. So I think that was a good sort of theme of the book. There is another main timeline in the book. Let's get to another storyline, and that is Lawrence Newton's story, the main sort of protagonist here. And it tells his story about when he was first a young boy, and he was the son of a board member of one of these large corporations, and he lived on one of these idyllic planets himself. And he's a big fan of Star Trek, except it's not Star Trek. It's like the 24th or 23rd century version of Star Trek. It's called sort of Galaxy Quest or Mission Quest or something like that. It's quite funny. And he really wants to become a starship captain, just like Captain Kirk or the equivalent in the book. I can't exactly remember who it is. And in the end, he rebels against his father and his family, and he travels to Earth to become a starship captain. But then he becomes an infantryman instead, and he has various adventures on different planets in different asset realization missions. And it tells of his experiences on Earth. And I really actually quite enjoy this part of the book. It's got some real good character development there, and it's a real world building kind of exercise, following Lawrence Newton going around sort of around these different solar systems and going around the future Earth. The thing is, after he leaves his home planet, the storyline doesn't actually contribute that much to the main plot, the main storyline of the book, but it is really good fun to read it as well, and there are some little mysterious things and references to his backstory that you find out progressively through the book. Although I think it could have been done with cutting down this part of the book, because, like I say, while you get to know the technology and the worlds of the book a bit more, sometimes I just think, you know, you could have just got on with it a bit quicker. But like I say, they are elaborate and engaging and quite vivid, the stories that are told here. And then eventually this timeline, the second timeline, merges into the first timeline, or the first merges into the second timeline, and the conclusion, you know, they join together quite nicely. The thing is, the whole plot of the book, I'm not going to go into the last quarter of the book because I don't want to reveal any major plot twists and the key sort of ingredients or who and what, who or what the fallen dragon is in the title. But I just want to say that while the book itself it's captivating and exciting, and the action sequences, especially near the end, are sort of well written, and the battles are imaginative and all that. The end of it does leave me feeling a bit cold, because, well, I don't really want to give it away, but let's just say that in all but maybe two of Peter Hamilton books that I've read, and I've pretty much read most of his books except one or two, he never seems to be able to wrap up the story without bringing in like a huge unexplained and unexplainable sort of massively advanced alien technology or future technology that just seems a bit too unbelievable. Like in the words, I guess in the words of Arthur C. Clarke, you know, technology so far advanced they are indistinguishable from magic just doesn't really get it for me, and this book isn't a big exception. I just want things to be a little bit more human and a little bit more down to earth in the end. So there is actually, though, a few final twists at the very end of the book that wrap up the story really nicely, and there's one certainly that wraps up two or three mysteries that put a big smile on my face. So it's definitely worth reading all the way through to the end. I mean, of course, you read it all the way through to the end. You don't want to just stop at page 700 out of 800. So that's pretty much the story, and it's enjoyable. It is satisfying for the most part, except for, like I say, the last 50 pages or so, where things just get a bit out of control. And the characters are, of course, very well written, because that's what Peter Hamilton does best, character development. He does that in all of his books so well. The minor characters as well are very well written, which you can do in a book which is like 800 pages long, especially the members of Lawrence's platoon, because you sort of really get to know his platoon quite well. And I'd have liked to spend more time with them, actually. I'd have liked to have just read the story of Lawrence Hamilton and his platoon up until the fighting of in Thalspring. I mean, it could have been a two-part book in that way, but it's all mixed in, and the sort of this interleaving stories are told quite well. There's also a lot of ambiguity in exactly who is the bad guy, who is the villain in this book, because you're rooting for Lawrence all the way through, but then you realise that his mission, he's actually not fighting on the correct side. And then Denise is like another hero, the other main protagonist in the book, but then her methods sort of as a terrorist organization, you can't really go, come on and fight it, because she's fighting directly against Lawrence's platoon, and even though you know Lawrence is in the bad, she becomes the main enemy at one point, so it's quite hard to sympathize with her, even though in the end you're rooting for her. So it's all quite weird in this way. Also, Simon Roderick, or the various Simon Rodericks, they could be viewed as the villain because they're the main sort of like management of the ZB Corporation, but even by the end that becomes more and more ambiguous, and you're not quite sure who to root for in that direction either. So I guess the only villain of this book is probably the political setup and the bureaucratic setup and the corporations themselves, and just the future is like the villain, and it's the future that everyone is fighting against. And I guess that's one of the main themes of the book, actually, because, I mean, of course you get that in so many books, but like in science fiction, the impact of technology on human society, and in the end this really sort of drives the point of the book home as well, about this theme. And the technology and science itself is actually really good. It's really imaginative, and this is another one of Peter F. Hamilton's strength. He can really talk a good future. In all of his, he's got these quite a few like future series of these books, and all of them are very, very well realised and very well investigated. One of the main things in this is the skin suit, which is like a starship trooper advanced body armour, but it's all organic and made out of flesh, along with all the weapons and armour itself. The terraforming and the sort of like the colonizing of other planets, that's another really strong point in the book, and for me that's like the most interesting part in some ways, where it goes right and where it goes wrong. The story of the planet Santa Chico is certainly very interesting, an interesting take on the future course of humanity, and especially how they close off the sky. It's sort of referenced a few times, this Santa Chico, throughout the book, and when you finally get to the story, it's sort of very well worth the wait, and you can see that it lives up to its recommendation. No, not its recommendation, its reputation as a military engagement and a planet itself. And there's plenty of extrapolation into the future of computing, and also there's a great little nod to sort of like petty politics in a way, that it talks about like the green movement is on Earth, even though the whole Earth is back to its natural state and there's no pollution and stuff. The green movement still has things to complain about, and I quite like that as well. And yeah, that's the technology, except that, as I said before, the technology it sort of goes a little bit out of the realms of believability. And I don't mean out of the realms of believability, because of course it's science fiction. It's very difficult to make the future believable. But I want to know, like, at the beginning of the book, if something's believable at the beginning of the book, I go, right, okay, I'll accept that technology. But by the end of the book, I don't want it to get more and more and more and more and more advanced and exponentially more advanced until the end of the book. Of course, all the new technologies that are introduced later on in the book, they're really cool, really imaginative, but I think it could, like, benefit a little bit from more restrictions on the kind of technologies and science and inventions that the author wants to put in. Be a little bit less imaginative, I think, and a little bit more restrictive, and it could get a bit better at the end. And like I say, the themes of the book, again, most of all, the technology and its impact on human society, but also there's another big theme and a whole other storyline throughout the book, which is sort of like what choices you make in life and why you make those choices and how they play out. There's another sub-story, which is like a story in a story that Denise tells to her children in her kindergarten, and it's sort of like this space-age fairy tale of a guy who goes out and tries to find meaning in life, and it sort of wraps up the themes of the story quite well, and sort of Lawrence's wanderings through life. You know, after his first initial rebellion, he sort of never really takes control of his future, and finds it hard to take control of his future as well, up until the very end of the book. So that's about it. It's an epic book. It's very big. I've gone on far too long already for this 10-minute review. It's going on, 16 minutes now as well. I'll just like to give it 4 out of 5 stars, mainly because it's just such an enjoyable read. It's a real page-turner. You sort of skim through it quite quickly, or it feels like you're going quite quickly, and the stories move on quite quickly. But because it's a big book, you feel like you get your money's worth out of it as well. And it's got great ideas and technology and characters and space battles and other things like that. It doesn't get a higher score. It doesn't get 5 out of 5 just because it does feel a little bit too long. I reckon they could have cut it down. Maybe an editor could have cut this down by maybe 100 pages or so like that. And also the ending is a bit too unsatisfying. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but I wish Peter Hamilton would just end a book in a slightly, like, it's always like a world-shattering or a universe-shattering ending. And I guess the way I'd want to see one of his books end is just to keep it, like, in the same sort of human level as the rest of the book. You don't always have to change the whole universe by the end of a science fiction book. So that's about it, really. 4 out of 5 stars. Next episode, I'll be reviewing another book from 2001. It's by an author called Robert Reed. I've never read any of his books before, and the book is called Marrow. And so, quote on the front here, Robert Reed is the new century's most compelling science fiction voice. Marrow is one of the most original versions in a long while. Stephen Baxter. There's a quote from Stephen Baxter. So probably some, if Stephen Baxter quote, probably some hard science fiction to go next week as well. Not maybe space opera, I'm not quite sure. Marrow, an interesting title of a book. I'll see what it goes next time. So if you've enjoyed this episode, if you've got some views on Peter F. Hamilton, maybe another recommendation of a book that I should review of his or anything like that, please email me. luke@juggler.net is the email. And yeah, I'll just check out the website, sfbrp.com. And that's about it. See you later.